Friday the 5th of March, Yud Tes Adar, Rabbi Malcolm Herman, Masi HaEgel.
First of all, apologies for the late arrival, thanks to some emergency gasworks. It did occur to me that giving a share of Masi HaEgel, captain of the late arrival, wasn't such an inappropriate introduction. So, basically, the classic Mefarsh and Ma'aseh HaEgel are very well known. I want to focus on two pesukim in the middle of Ma'aseh HaEgel, which really raised many, many interesting questions. And they are pesukim in Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Tes Vav and Pasuk Tes Zayin. Moshe Rabbeinu is on Har Sinai, Kodesh Baruch Hu says to him, there's been a calamity, there's been a tragedy, they're afraid, you've got to go down, because everything's gone wrong. And in fact, the very last pasuk in Perek Lamed Aleph, it says, Vayitinal Moshe Kecholos Nedaber Ito, Behar Sinai, prior to the tragedy happening, it says, Kodesh Baruch Hu gave Moshe Rabbeinu the luchos Eidos, Evan Kusuvim Pe'es Balakim. There's a description that the luchos are stone, and they are written Pe'es Balakim. Not much more description than that. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, then we have the beginning of the delayed episode, and Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, go down. And then in the middle, back in Perek Lamed Beis, it says, Vayifen Vayered Moshe Min Ahar. So he's been told that there's been a tragedy. His first thing to do is to appeal to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Vayichal Moshe, to appeal for clemency, to achieve a stay of execution. Right, to achieve a stay of execution. And then we see once he's achieved a stay of execution, and there's a holding position, then the Torah tells us he comes down from the mountain. But in the middle of these pesukim, we have another description of the luchos. The shnei luchos eidos, the other luchos, kusuv mishnei Ibrahim. He has the two luchos in his hands, they are written on both sides, mizeh mizeh, va luchos ma'aseh elokim. So in this middle of this dramatic moment, when really what appears to be the emergency is to get down as quickly as possible and try and sort the situation out, suddenly we have a pause, as it were in cinematic terms, the camera pauses, and we pause for a few seconds to now describe the luchos in greater detail. So the three kashas really that are appropriate and are asked by many different people. One kasha is, why now? Why a description now of the luchos at this moment in time? The second kasha is that what's being added to what's already been said? We've already had a description of the luchos as Etz Balakim, and why is it now, what's being added to what's being said, what's already been said previously? And the third kasha is a very interesting kasha, a very basic kasha really, is why did Moshe Rabbeinu bring down the luchos at all? Once he had been told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu that tragedy had struck, so why bring down the luchos and leave them up there? It was clearly going to be an inappropriate gift to Klal Yisrael in the situation in which they found themselves. So I'd like to share with you some of the range of Mefarshim, both Rishonim and Achronim, that deal with these questions. I haven't yet found one that deals with all of them, but by building up the picture through many of them, we'll see that all these things are very beautifully addressed. So the first point, of course, is always Rashi. What does it mean, the luchos? Written, luchos kusuvim mishnei evrahim, mizeh u'mizehim kusuvim. So Rashi highlights, or really Rashi plus the Sifter Chachomim, based on the Gemara and Shabbos, that there were two miracles within the luchos. One miracle was that they could be read both sides, even though they were hewn all the way through. So if they're hewn all the way through, and you would expect on the reverse side they would be mirror writing, nonetheless, they were read on both sides. And the other nace, as the Gemara highlights in Shabbos, is that some of the letters were stood by a miracle. The Mem and the Samach, for example, were basically from you all the way through, you've got the piece in the middle, and the piece in the middle stood by a miracle. So therefore, says Rashi, that's what it means, they were a visible evidence of the fact that this was Min HaShamayim. This was Ma'aseh Elokim, this was Etz Balakim. For interesting, the Orach Chaim says, one of the reasons why they're called Luchos Eidos, Luchos of Testimony, Al Pishnari Mezim Yochum Dovar, that there were two Eidim within the luchos themselves that they were divinely given. One Eid was the fact they were written around both sides, and the other Eid was the fact that the Mem and the Samach were miraculously maintained. So that's why they call luchos Eidus, the luchos which in themselves had within them Eidus, that they were Etz Balakim. But let's to begin the picture, the very first word of this pasuk, Pasuk Tes Vav, Vayifen Vayered Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu turned and he descended the mountain. So what's this word Vayifen mean? I mean, we don't really need this word, it would seem, Vayifen, in terms of our understanding. Vayered Moshe Menahar, Moshe Rabbeinu descended from the mountain. So this word becomes, I think, a very important word to set the context of what's happening precisely at this moment. Ibn Ezra says, "Ka'odom mistakem mayaseh." Vayifel almost captures the moment of uncertainty of Moshe Rabbeinu on the mountain. He's not sure what to do. He's just been informed that it's all gone wrong down below. Vayifel, ha'odam mistakel mayaseh, like a person who's considering his options. Then the realization is he's got to descend. He has to go down. That and what happens up there has got to stop. He's got to go down. Interestingly enough, the Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, it's Nemes Yaakov, he says that actually there's a halacha which we learn out from this one word vayifel, because in Yeradeh Siman Reish Mem Beis, in Hilchas Talmud Torah and Hilchas Kvod Rabbi, there's a long sif that describes the inappropriateness of a casual relationship with one's rav, and it describes the yira almost have for one's rav, and in terms of you don't even ask him how he is and how you interact with him, etc., etc. The end of that sif says that you're not allowed to exit your rav backwards, turning your face to it, turning your back to it. You're not allowed to do that. I once met someone who's married to a relation of Rabbi Yitzchak Kuntner, and it's well known, Rabbi Yitzchak Kuntner, when you left his office, you exited backwards, you didn't turn your back on him. And apparently, if you go to his office today, that by the door, there's still the heel marks for those who didn't quite get their reverse policy proper, and you can see when you exit backwards. Says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, as indeed some of the other Mefarshim, what does it mean by Yifen? Moshe Rabbeinu turned his back on a Kodesh Baruch and came down the mountain. So they're very different Mefarshim, but Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says that because over here he was on a new shlichus from a Kodesh Baruch. Kodesh Baruch told him to go down, to leave, to go down. And therefore it was appropriate to move on to the next shlichus from the Rebbe, from a Kodesh Baruch, as he went straight away. So he suggests, even in terms of halacha, if what you're doing now is doing the next shlichus of your rab, you're not just leaving your rab, on the contrary, you are continuing the job the rab has asked you to do, then it's appropriate, on the contrary, to move on again with it straight away. Others say that as well. Others Shalom actually say that as well. Carrying the luchas, he couldn't come down the mountain backwards. Okay, but that's another doubt. But the Aruch Haim says as follows, and this is, this, as I say, sets the context. Now, Rav Chaim says this is not talking about a physical turning around, but it's actually talking about, if you were, like an emotional turning around. If we contrast what happens before these two psukim and after these two psukim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, it's all gone wrong, Shicheis Amcha, there's been tragedy. What's Moshe Rabbeinu's first response? Is to appeal for clemency. He appeals for clemency. Don't get so annoyed with them. You can't destroy them. They're Klal Yisrael. They're your people. He appeals for clemency. But when Moshe Rabbeinu comes down the mountain and sees what's going on, his approach is a completely different approach. He says to Klal Yisrael, you have sinned incredibly. He says, maybe I'll be able to achieve atonement. Says the Aruch Haim, the Vayifen over here is not about a physical turning around. It's about an attitude of turning around. Up on the mountain, as the intercessor for Klal Yisrael, it was appropriate, clemency, mercy, then not so bad, the sin can't be as great, etc., etc. When he came down the mountain, it was a completely different approach. Now it was, what have you done? How could you do this? That's the Vayifen over here. But that then tells us that these Pesukim, as it were, are mamish the transition between heaven and earth. These two Pesukim, which talk about Moshe Rabbeinu coming down the mountain, the transition between heaven and earth. Up on the mountain, Moshe Rabbeinu was there to plead. Coming down the mountain, he became the leader that had to take control of the situation, that now had to remonstrate with Klal Yisrael and put it all right. So now, if we look at it in those terms, now let's have a look at what the Rishonim say, actually in terms of the positioning of this Pesukim over here. Let's begin with the Ramban, Rishonim and Acharonim. The Ramban says, asks his kasha, or he answers his kasha, why is it that it's just over here these pesukim are placed, they are inappropriately placed over here, they should have belonged in the end of the previous chapter. He says that this over here was to accentuate the mila of Moshe Rabbeinu, that although the luchas were ma'ase elokim, although the luchas were clearly a divine gift, lo nimna Moshe b'chol zem l'shabarizom. He did not refrain or restrain or hesitate at all about smashing the luchas. Because he was angry when he saw what had happened. So the first pshat of Ramban is, the reason why they're placed over here, as Moshe Rabbeinu descends from the mountain, is to accentuate the action of Moshe Rabbeinu in smashing the luchos. Despite the fact he was carrying the luchos to Ma'aseh Elokim, nonetheless, he had no hesitation at all that the right thing to do was to smash the luchos. As we know, Le'enei Kol Yisrael, this is part of his epitaph, the ultimate action of Moshe Rabbeinu. The second pshat of Ramban is, it was like this. There was at this point in time that the osios flew up the Shemaim. That, as it were, they lost that aspect of their open miracle, their overt miracle, and therefore the reason why we describe what they are now is not so much to accentuate the Maisa Moshe Benu, but to explain chronologically at what moment in time the osios flew away from the Luchas. That's the pshatim of the Ramban. Of course, we know the famous Balaturim, Vayashlech Miyodoi Miyodov, that initially described as Luther's Miyodoi in his hands. When it says Vayashlech, it's read Miyodov, but it's written Miyodoi, because whilst they were divinely carried, they were carried by one hand. As soon as they lost the osios, they became Miyodov. There was a change between Yodoi and Yodov, focused on the Kriyin Kasiv in Yodoi and Yodov over there. The Amidava says that the reason why, the Amidava addresses two questions. Question number one, why did he bring them down? And also our question, why are they placed over here? It says, Ratzo Moshe leshaber es levav ha'om. He brought them down to use them as a Musa Joshua to the people. Can you see what I'm bringing down from the mountain? You can see from all four sides, these were Ma'aseh Elokim. This is a description that explains the strategy of Moshe Rabbeinu in bringing them down. His purpose in bringing them down was to use them as a Musa Joshua for the people, to take the luchos and to smash them, although they were clearly something of such a remarkable and exceptional nature, and his purpose therefore, A, in bringing them down, and B, in smashing them at that moment, and the importance of describing what they are here and now, is to focus on the strategy of Moshe Rabbeinu of Tochacha to the people. He was using the luchos and using this action to demonstrate to them the tragedy of what had happened. This was his Tochacha, the very act of smashing the luchos, nothing more needed to be said. It's very interesting that, as Ramban also notes, that when Moshe Rabbeinu came down the mountain, and there was no attempt to rebel against Moshe Rabbeinu. On the contrary, he took their investment, they invested all their gold into it, and they disintegrated the whole thing. They're not at any stage at all. That's part of the whole Ramban's pshat, that clearly they were looking for a Moshe Acher, not for a place in Kadosh Baruch Hu. Because when he comes down, they accept him immediately. There's no rebellion, there's no attack, there's no mutiny at all. Says the Hamidava, part of that was, but before he'd even said a word to the people, he had shown them by his action in smashing the luchos the tragedy of their ways. So for the Hamidava, it's not so much about accentuating the Mesiras Nefesh, or if you like, Moshe Rabbeinu smashing the luchos. It's more about the luchos being utilized as a tochacha for Klal Yisrael. Interestingly enough, the Aznaim Torah, Zalman Tzorotskin, again the same question. He's a very beautiful phrase. He says, Hispidon bedvarim chamim b'yoseh. Says this was a hesped for the luchos. Over here, these two psukim are a hesped for the luchos. That here, there will never be another set of luchos like these. Not at all. Even though the psalacha, but they weren't divinely given. So therefore, again, we pause for a second. This was a hesped for the luchos prior to their smashing. Which of course, and therefore, the luchos become a symbol of the changed nature of the relationship between Klal Yisrael and Bnei Yisrael. There will never again be Klal Yisrael and Kadosh Baruch Hu. There will never again be a moment like this, luchos like this, a mamad hasinag like this. So the luchos themselves, given what they are, become a symbol that capture the tragedy of this moment. And this is a hesped for the luchos, kami yachal, as it were, beforehand. For the Klei Yachar, very beautiful Klei Yachar over here, it says that here's for him, the focus of this psukim is the word chorus. Chorus al haluchos. Chorus al haluchos. As we know, that's not the only word for to you or to engrave. Normally it's chokeke. But chorus al tikra, chorus el acheres. So this word chorus is not simply about youing the luchos. It's about the freedom. Enochon ben chon and amisha esa b'tera. So somehow or other, the luchos themselves emphasized, interestingly, that what appears, what in many circles would be seen as almost a contradiction, that it's only via a structure that a person has true liberty. It's only via a routine, a demand, that a person can achieve real freedom. What does that mean? And this, says the Peyakar, the letters themselves demonstrated that. Clearly the letters were independent of the stone. The letters were not part of the stone, they were independent of the stone. That's why it says al haluchos, not the beluchos. They were floating around the stone, not within the stone. And it brings a medrash that says that that when Klal Yisrael accepted the Torah, they would be choros min malchios. They would be free from dominion of foreign kingdoms. Choros min yisurin, free from affliction, and choros even mimachamavis, and free from death. Amazing medrash. Amazing medrash. The bris with the luchos, the letters themselves demonstrated that for those who would accept the Torah, the lomdei Torah, those who accept the Torah, they would be totally independent, they would totally transcend, and be free from all of the pain that life often inevitably brings. But that was as long as they were connected. The symbolism of the letters flying away was that they'd lost this. They lost this. They had lost this unique bris with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Now they were not worthy. And therefore, when the letters fly away, it symbolized to Klal Yisrael that you'd lost this sense of independence that would come from your bris crucial with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And therefore, as a consequence of that, so Moshe Rabbeinu broke the luchos. He could feel the letters had flown away, therefore he broke the luchos. Again, therefore, their positioning over here, also in a different way, demonstrates not simply the enormity of their transgression, but the consequences of their transgression. The consequences was a relationship that could not be restored in exactly the same way. At least not till Melech HaSemishkan. Couldn't be restored in exactly the same way. So it's not focused on the action of the moment, but the result of the action. That you would lose this sense of independence, the claim that came with the bris crucial of Klal Yisrael. Let us, in the remaining a few minutes at least, try and cram in, if we can, three other approaches. Although they don't deal directly, one does. Let's deal with the first one that does. One will deal directly with this question, but I think they certainly answer it. Let's at least try a couple of them. The Rav Shaul Shaul Hirsch over here, in his very long analysis of Maaseh Egel, but essentially, as do so many Mefarshim and variations on the theme, demonstrate that the fundamental mistake of Klal Yisrael was that in one form or another, they wanted an alternative Moshe Rabbeinu. They thought that they couldn't have a relationship with Hashem outside of some form of conduit, some form of physical connection, either in person or in peace or in place. And therefore, it says, Rav Shaul Shaul Hirsch, that when we talk about the luchos are written Mishnei Evrehim, they're read from all sides. In fact, there's a discussion exactly what it means, all sides, but one of the Mefarshim is actually Mamish read from all four sides, that they were a block. On whichever side you were standing, you could read the luchos. Says Rav Hirsch, that if you think about it, if I have a piece of paper which I'm reading out to you, then you are dependent on me for the transmission of what's on the paper. But if it is read on all four sides, then they themselves became a magnificent symbol that you don't, every single member of Klal Yisrael had a unique and individualized link with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Beautiful idea. So therefore, the fact that over here we pause to describe what the luchos are, the luchos themselves were not just a tochachar, but the emphasis on their mistake. The emphasis on their mistake. You thought you needed some kind of link. You thought you needed some kind of connection, intermediary between myself and you, said the Kodesh Baruch Hu. No, you didn't. Look at the luchos. The luchos themselves were to be visible for all of you on all four sides. And therefore, their placement over here is also very precise and very particular. That they become the symbol, the message of their mistake. They become the corrective of the mistake that Klal Yisrael made. And they saw that before they were broken. Let me just add a couple of other ideas, which is this. Got the five past?
Okay.
Fine. People have schedules as well. Was it till Shabbos? But the Meshach Chochma says as follows. In essence, Meshach Chochma, if I've understood him correctly, which I'm never too sure in tune, but on this very beautiful Meshach Chochma, in essence, the fundamental mistake of Klal Yisrael was that as yet they hadn't internalized the Ein Oid Milvado to the degree to which it was necessary. That actually there can be no Kedusha whatsoever in anything at all unless it is the investment of Hashem. They thought that the Kedusha of Hashem in their midst was dependent on Moshe Rabbeinu. On the contrary, it was the Kedusha of Moshe Rabbeinu was dependent on the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They thought the Kedusha of Hashem in the midst was dependent on some kind of item. On the contrary, there can be no item which has any Kedusha whatsoever unless HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants it. And in essence, says the Meshech Chochmah, that this was their failure to internalize at this point in time the reality of this concept. Therefore, the Meshech Chochmah says two things. If Moshe Rabbeinu had come down with the Luchas and given them the Luchas, would this have corrected their mistake, or perhaps, in certain respects, accentuated their mistake? He was bringing down an item which had in it visible Kedusha. Maybe this would have accentuated their error, that actually they need something, an item. Therefore, on the contrary, what Moshe Rabbeinu did was he smashed the Luchas to demonstrate to them that even the Luchas, which are the visible gift of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that every human being could see, their Ma'aseh Elokim, Etzba Elokim, Kesuv Mishnayim, even the Luchas, actually, you know what? If it's not the Ratzon Hashem, then even the Luchas have no intrinsic Kedusha. They have no intrinsic Kedusha. But of course, even the Shivrei Luchas and Menuchim Ma'arim, they were put in the Orim. So that message became a critical message. And it's fascinating, because in the Aron itself, in the Kodesh Kedoshim, in the Beis HaMikdash, which was a physical entity, which in certain respects you might have thought could also have accentuated their error, but no, in the Aron itself, in the holiest parts of the Kodesh Kedoshim, in the Aron itself, in the Beis HaMikdash, there were the Shivrei Luchas as a permanent and eternal reminder that don't make any mistake. It's not dependent on a person or a place or anything. The Kedosh is dependent simply on the return of Hashem. Faces, that's why Moshe they're your people. They see themselves as too tied to you. Not like Rashi says, Erev Rav. They see themselves as too tied to you. That's their mistake. Shiches Amcha. They think that it's only via you and through you that it can come. See, on a very similar way, there's a very extensive Beis HaLevi on the whole Ma'aseh Egel. Even though himself, he writes, it's quite unbelievable to read, but it says himself in a bracket that he hasn't seen this actually clearly in the Sefer, the idea that he writes, but this is Midato, so it's beautiful to see the kind of, what's the word, uncertainty about writing something that he hasn't initially saw since Sefer Rishon, Sefer Rambam, etc., etc. But he says that actually what Klal Yisrael were asking for says that we know that every mitzvah has depth and meaning and creates tikkunim and worlds beyond our own. Every single mitzvah, whether we understand how or not how, but every mitzvah creates effects in parallel universes beyond our own. He says that, and of course, that was the whole essence of the Mishkan. Now, a person might make a mistake to think that if a person themselves is well-versed in Sifrei Kabbalah and Machshavos and all that type of thing, perhaps they themselves. If you know what the Mishkan was supposed to achieve, then maybe, even without the command, you could work backwards and create the Mishkan driven by an understanding of the God. Like any good engineer, if you tell them the machine what you want the machine to do, then even if it hasn't been built before, perhaps the engineer could build the machine not understanding the God. So the person might think that, you know what, if we understand our P.E. Kabbalah, what the Mishkan was supposed to achieve, then it didn't need a tzivoy to create a Mishkan. Their Kavona, says the Beis HaLevi, was actually to build a Mishkan, or the effect of a Mishkan. They were the Dar Deah. They'd had the ultimate experience of hearing the voice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ponimel, the confrontation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They came, and they came to Aaron to help them. They came to Aaron to help them, and they said to Aaron, listen, we know what's necessary, because we know what this can achieve. We want to build it now in the absence of Moshe Rabbeinu. And Aaron says to them, no. Without its tzivui, it's irrelevant. Without tzivui, it cannot have Kedusha. Even if it would look exactly the same as the ultimate Mishkan, unless it's driven by tzivui of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it cannot have Kedusha at all. And therefore, this was their mistake in the Egel. The mistake was to think that you can achieve without tzivui. Without tzivui, there's no Kedusha. There's a beautiful essay in Ashkofa, Maimon Ashkofa, in terms of the understanding that without tzivui, there cannot be any Kedusha whatsoever. Now, he himself doesn't address this issue, but it occurs to me as well that, a little bit similar to Thayer Yakar, that's the essence of Choros and Cheres. the essence of the Quran to understand that even freedom in Torah terms can only be the result of tzivoy. Because freedom is the realization of a person's spiritual potential, which can only be the result of tzivoy. So the Luchos themselves came to accentuate this fundamental concept that without tzivoy, there cannot be Kedusha. We haven't got time to elaborate on base slavery, but let me add one final point if I may, which seems too connected. There is a sefer, the Nachlas Yaakov, Yaakov Melissa, more well known as the Nesivos. He talks about the command to Bezalel. Command to Bezalel, which of course is also in this week's parasha. And the famous Medrash that I call Moshe Ben says to Bezalel, build a house, build a cave, our own, etc., etc. And Bezalel says, no, that's in the nose of our doubt. This isn't where we do things. Now, as builders, first we build the house, and then we put in the furniture. We can't put the furniture in first. Says Moshe Ben to Bezalel, you're right, Bezalel Kael Hayisa. You're right, you must have been lurking in the shadows, you must have overheard my conversation with Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's why Hashem said to me, yes, first build the house and then build the cave. It's a Medrash clear almost. Moshe Rabbeinu changed the instruction of Kodesh Baruch Hu. Hashem says build the house first, and he asked for the cave first. So, briefly, it says as follows, that of course both perspectives are right, but depending where you were coming from. That for Moshe Rabbeinu, the Moshe gives us as follows. Imagine going into a sofa and you want to buy a tefillin bag. You wouldn't say to the sofa, it's a very beautiful tefillin bag, I think I'll buy that. By the way, while you're at it, put some tefillin in. It would be an inappropriate way to speak, because one is the tefillin, one is the ikkah. And therefore, says the Yaakov Menisa, even if both items have kedusha, you have to know what's the tefillin, what's the ikkah. For Moshe Rabbeinu, he understood that the goal of the Mishkan was the Aron. He understood all the levels that were necessary in terms of that. He understood that. So Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't ask the Bezalel to build the house first and then the Kenim, because that, if you like, would be from his level of denigration of what the Aron HaKodesh was. A denigration. Bezalel said, we're not on Yom Madrega. We've got to go stage by stage, instruction by instruction, understand the investment of Kedusha required bit by bit before it can be it. So the Kodesh says, Moshe Rabbeinu, you're right. Bezalel Kaleisa, you were a little bit removed from where I am in terms of my association with Kodesh Baruch Hu. For you, that is the right instruction. Therefore, in fact, the Beis Halevi goes on to say the whole essence of Naaseh v'Nishma was, Naaseh means that sometimes we have to do before we can, and then invest depth to depth with it. I'm rushing this a bit. But in other words, what he's saying is that we understand now how the Maaseh Mishkan was a kapara for the Egel. Because the whole point is that it has to be instruction driven. You can't jump the gun. You can't go off your own understanding prior to the instruction and the concomitant, or the parallel approach of instruction plus depth that go hand in hand.